I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Syrupcast, Mobile Syrup's Canadian tech-focused podcast. I'm Patrick O'Rourke, and Brad Bennett, a man who still refers to himself as the bad boy of tech. He's on the pod again. He's here every week. He is the co-host after all. How are you doing, Brad?
I'd stomp on it. I'd stomp on tech.
You'd stomp
right
on
under
tech.
My heel. I don't That's care. Good. I don't care about any of this. But no, there are a few things I care about. I think we're going to talk about them today because Pat and I just got back from WWDC 2023, and there was so much stuff, way too much stuff, even.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack. We're going to talk about the Vision Pro, the 15-inch MacBook Air, very briefly the M2 Ultra chip, all the software updates, iOS 17, all the 17s. And we were both there at this year's event for the first time. That's a bit of a first for Mobile Syrup to have more than one human being at an Apple event, let alone any event, really.
Two human beings, two full people. Yeah, I'm part robot, but yeah, we were there. I'm like Ash from Alien. I'm full of milk. I don't know why I said that.
That's great. Now you just have to get like a glass of milk and put it on the table.
Yeah, every episode, time. Just like drinking the milk, and everyone's watching like, is that his blood or is he just like milk? Because I don't think they ever really say that. I think Ash drinks milk in the movie. Anyway, side tangent on Alien.
Yeah, they never really reveal it, I don't think.
I just remember it being gross.
But I think just to kick things off, I'll ask you, what did you think about this year's WWDC? Were you impressed with what you saw? Did you think it was low-key? Last year's was, I don't want to say awful, but there wasn't really anything interesting. This year, I think we saw some cool hardware announcements, but where was your head at with all that?
Yeah, I mean, elephant in the room, Vision Pro at the end of it was like a knock your socks off moment. Like, it was just really exciting. Like, who knows what's going to happen there? And I mean, it was just nice to be there and to see that and kind of see that shift potentially happen. Who knows if the shift will happen, but to be on the like boots on the ground for that is like, maybe I'll tell my kids about this someday, which is an interesting one. But yeah, compared to last year we were looking at like, I feel like coming out of it, we were like, okay, it's the iOS 16 like software updates and like these new software features. But this year it really does seem like hardware. Although the software still has a lot of like hidden gems, which is kind of good for us on the like press corps because we get to like spend a couple of weeks unpacking all that and help our WWDC coverage last a little longer, which is always nice.
Yeah,
more fonts, it looks like there's more fonts, and that's my number one. Sorry.
I think the thing for me was this was the most hardware focused WWDC I've seen in a while. We didn't just get the Vision Pro, which is obviously like a big deal. It's a historic moment for Apple, regardless of how you feel about the company. Like the number of times that Apple has introduced new product categories, they're very, very
computing
few
platforms. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the last one was the Apple Watch, and I was covering the industry, but I wasn't at that particular event. So I've been around a long time, and this is the first time that I was at an event where this is an entirely new product other than the HomePod, which I don't really totally count for reasons that I can't really wrap my head around.
Yeah, I think HomePod, AirPods, as much as they became a huge like market for Apple, like AirPods definitely sell gangbusters. But yeah, it's just like it didn't really represent the future. And as much as it was just like, this is a nice little accessory, whereas the Vision Pro isn't an accessory. It's like if you could just, well, no one would, and I can't imagine anyone would for a few years. But in theory, the promise that they're sort of outlining for us is that you could just buy it as your only Apple device and it would work and it would be great.
It's going to replace.
Whereas if you just bought AirPods, it would be a brutal situation for you.
It's going to replace your soundbar and your TV and what was the other thing that was mentioned?
And your computer, I think.
Oh, and your computer. Yeah, yeah. It'll be the all-in-one device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one
Before
computer
we talk...
it will definitely replace. Okay, I was going to segue into the MacBook Air because it's
no. Oh, yeah, you're beating me to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Before we get into the rest of the hardware stuff, let's talk about some of the more low-key software announcements. So there's iOS 17 and iPadOS 17. And across the board, as far as I'm concerned, they're pretty pedestrian updates. Like iOS 17, the only thing that stood out to me was standby mode. I think that's cool. It's a really interesting feature, being able to put your phone just on your desk or on your bedside and having it basically turn into a clock that shows you very specific information that you might be interested in over the course of the day. That's neat. I like literally put my phone on a stand all the time in front of me on my desk at home. So that's something that I would actually personally use. iPadOS.
I'm still hoping to figure out if that is MagSafe only or not. So, excuse me. I believe we were told that it was MagSafe only. At one of the dinners, I think it slipped out. I wasn't sure. But Kat just did a video on iOS 17 yesterday, which maybe went around those like embargo sort of stuff. But I think she said that it worked even when it was plugged in. So it's really up in the air right now. And no one, I think, on our team has the beta yet. So we can't really determine. And then the betas aren't really finalized or set in stone. So it's hard to determine from that. But it would be nice if it worked on like regular wireless charging or even plugged in, because that would just be handy to like kind of have that all the time you plug in as more of a consistent thing you can bank on, rather than being like, this only works on my MagSafe charger on my desk or my, I don't know where, MagSafe charger in my car or whatever, you know.
Yeah, so we operate in this weird world where like to agree to attend WWDC, we sign this embargo and it dictates that we can't talk about the developer. We can talk about the developer betas and what we saw during the presentation, but we can't publicly like write about or make videos about the developer betas on our phones.
We just can't release it until the public beta goes live.
Yes. Yeah.
Last year I had the developer beta of iOS 16 and I did a big feature on it, but I wasn't allowed to release it until the public beta went live, which kind of does make sense. Like I get how it sort of helps the like fanfare of the public beta and like letting people know in sort of a second wave what's there. But yeah, it is a bit restrictive when we're trying to find these like nitty gritty features.
Kind of silly to an extent, because like some of the less Apple access Apple blogs are doing all of that, right? And we're writing about it anyways, but we're not actually using the beta. Well, we are using the beta, but we're not using it. It's like this weird thing, this weird like loophole. I don't really understand it from Apple's perspective totally. That's pretty inside baseball. I mean, going back to iPadOS and iOS, was there anything that stood out to you other than standby?
Standby is the big one, showing me like, you know, ambient information, clocks, calendar, like upcoming agenda stuff, and then also like being a virtual photo frame. You know how I love like putting my photos as my wallpaper. So
that's true.
Like drop my iPhone on a charger underneath my desk when I'm working and my photos will just come through for me to kind of see. Brings me joy, so I'm happy about that. And then I have a few other things that I did get excited about in these. So there's new, like I was saying before, the fonts. So this new font weight. So they finally brought customizable lock screens to iPadOS, and it does seem like it's going to come to Mac next year, because they did change the way the Mac lock screen looks, but I don't think you can customize it yet, but you can adjust the font weight. So that kind of gives you more options with the fonts. And I do believe that it's going to add more fonts as well, because when they showed off the contact card thing, which is another part of iOS updates where you can build a new contact card. So similarly, when you have an iMessage profile and then your friends get the profile picture you've chosen on their iMessage screen, this would happen on sort of a larger scale. So even when you call them, it would be like a cool cover photo of you. But when Apple showed off that, it showed off different fonts than the lock screen, but the same sort of font customization editor. So it leads me to believe that those fonts will be all over the place, which is exciting. And that was like my little huge nerd out thing. It was just like finally more customization
options
for
lock
screen. Oh yeah. And then one of the weird things that we didn't talk about a lot, but they did announce, is Apple announced a whole new app. They announced a journaling
app. What's the app? What's it called?
Journal.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that.
Right? Yeah. When I was doing my research, I was like, oh, my goodness. I forgot about this app. And guess what? It's not even coming out with iOS 17. It's coming out. It's the later this year feature this year. You know, there's always one feature that like comes out later. I think it was sweater mode's real thing is called.
I know what you're talking about.
Really fine details. Anyway, and last year it was SOS, and this year it does appear to be this like journaling app.
Deep Fusion.
Yeah, that's what it was called. But yeah, why do you think the journaling app is delayed, and why do you think they even made a journaling app?
I don't know. Sometimes they'll release apps that, like, I don't really see. Like, there's so many third-party apps out there already that do exactly what this app is offering.
I guess so.
And they've existed forever. I think sometimes Apple sees those apps and decides that it wants to do its own take on it. I'm sure whatever Apple's doing is probably better than what third-party developers are doing. Maybe it's even like a third-party app that it killed off and like just absorbed into the Apple spaceship, something like that. We see that happen all the time. But I don't see why it would be delayed. It's just it's a journaling app. It's not like some kind of crazy feature or something like that.
Yeah, I believe there is supposed to be a bit of stuff in it, but like nothing specifically insane, you know? Like nothing that seemed to be like, whoa, that's next gen. You know, it didn't seem like it was full of AI or anything specifically like that.
Well, so. I think a good thing to point out there is like we forgot about it. So
yeah, I think most people did.
That exciting, right? Simple fact that like I didn't even have that in the podcast notes. I forgot that it existed.
Yeah. It says on Apple's website, Journal is a new way to reflect on and relive special moments. Capture your thoughts on life's big events or everyday activities. Add details to any entry with photos, music, and audio recordings, and more. Mark important moments and revisit them later to find new insights and set goals. And then the other thing it sort of says on that is no one can access your journal but you. Like, you can lock it down with biometrics. So it's interesting. Huh. Maybe I'll start journaling more, but I don't know. I don't know if you're with me, but we write too much for me to write.
I'm not journaling. Like, yeah. There's no way.
This is my journal. Find... You guys are all privy to it right here.
MobileSerp.com is my journal of tech stuff every day. I write something.
Yeah.
But I think that covers iOS 17 and iPadOS 17. WatchOS 10, I think, was set up to be this big, like, total revamp of the operating system, and I don't think that's necessarily entirely what we got. The only thing that stood out to me, and I know there are probably like a few other big updates, was widgets.
Yep.
I like the idea of more at-a-glance information on the watch, but I haven't had the time to like delve in and really figure out how these widgets work. But I know you wrote like a little story summarizing all of the watchOS updates.
Yeah, because like you, I watched the presentation and we were blogging it, so things definitely fly
you
by
missed
us
up.
In that first wave. Yeah, it's fast and furious, but so always try to catch back up through the rest of the day. So anyway, I was like, I'm gonna write a piece about WatchOS because that was a bit of my blind spot, and they actually did revamp everything. Not everything. It's just really subtle. But as the watches have been getting bigger and bigger over the years, they just have a little more screen real estate to play with on the low end. And so they've sort of redesigned apps to play on the edges of screens more than being one big button in the middle. So, for example, the weather app now will show you kind of the hourly forecast in the middle and then have a button in each corner to take you somewhere else. Whereas previously
That's it didn't
nice, have
though.
Buttons because there just wasn't enough space. And yeah, a lot of apps now see the big redesign is that they sort of the app design ethos on Apple Watch is less about simplicity, and you can add more buttons and make them act more like regular apps, especially like you're wearing the Ultra right now, like huge screen. Alex, I know, has a smaller size Series 7 or Series 8, but that one also like they bumped up the small screen on that to be as big as the large Series 5 watch that I have. So there's a more level playing field, I think, now that allows them to do more stuff like that. And then on top of that, the home screen, that like honeycomb kind of visual grid, which, to be honest, I always liked. I did find it like kind of quick to go around, like when you get used to it. But now it's still a honeycomb, but it only goes up and down. So it's more predictable, basically. So previously you start in the middle right now, and you have like you're like I want to look for notes. So you like
yeah, and then you zoom
down,
in and
notes
out with
isn't
the digital
there.
Crown.
Yeah, but like but you go down, notes isn't there. So you're like, oh, I have to go up. It's not there. You have to go into the corner. Like you're looking in all these different directions for the app and you can't find it. Now it's just a straight up and down grid. So it's like
four apps.
And then so it's just, I think it will act more predictably for people and it'll be easier to use in the end of the day. It's not as slow as going through the entire list with the names of the apps, but it is a similar up and down motion that only goes one way.
The list view is still around though, right? That's what I use.
Yeah, I imagine they have all three.
Okay.
I'd imagine they'd have all three just as this transitionary phase, but I think the new one is going to be faster because it's basically the list you view, but it will show you like 20 apps instead of four at a time kind of thing.
Cool. Was there anything else in WatchOS 10 that was noteworthy?
One sec, I put it in the notes here.
That's the one that is a total blind spot for me. I don't know what I was doing during that portion of the presentation, but I was not paying attention to what they were talking about.
One of the things that kind of got announced with like a backbone of a lot of things was just like map updates where they're going to have like elevation data and whatnot. But a cool part about that on the watch is that it shows this like walkable circle around you. So it will show you like, you know, any way you walk in this direction will take about 10 minutes. So if you like quickly look at a map and you're like, I want to find a restaurant near me, what's within like walking distance, it will give you kind of a more accurate, just like at a glance notion for that, which I thought was cool.
That's cool.
Similar to like hiking, although hiking is usually on a trail. You're not usually being like, what if I go 10 minutes over there? I mean, it's all whatever, but it's kind of cool. And then leading out of that, the Compass app that got a big kind of revamp with the Apple Watch Ultra last year and then coming into this year got a cool backtracking feature that when you use it will show you where you last had service and where you last had SOS service.
Is this through waypoints, like dropping waypoints?
Yeah, it just auto drops okay. these waypoints, which is kind of cool. So if you're like backtracking in unfamiliar territory and you have spotty service and then something happens, you can quickly like look at your watch and be like, okay, a kilometer back we had SOS service, I guess that's where we go. And that's a pretty cool feature. Minimal. I mean, I was one that I went home this weekend and my dad is a big like outdoorsman, like hunting, fishing kind of guy. And he has like the original like Garmin backtracks that he really, really loves. And I was like showing him this and he was like, oh, no way. And he has a Fitbit to track his steps. And he's like, that does my steps too, right? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, wow, how long does it last? And I was like, only a day. And he's like, oh, yeah. If we get a bit more, I'd be in. And then I was like, well, there is one that does last a little longer and it's kind of more your style, but it's like, how much is the Ultra? Like $800? Might even be $1,000, honestly.
Let me check. Really it's expensive. Pretty expensive.
But yeah,
that was like, the same thing.
Sorry, Dad.
That was the same thing that my brother said. Like, he's always buying whatever the latest Garmin watch is, and he goes on like long canoe trips and stuff like that. And the reason why he's never, well, first of all, he doesn't own an iPhone. He does have one now. But back then, the reason why he never considered switching was because the battery life. Like, he needs it to last that long. He doesn't really have a way to charge it on the go other than like a portable battery pack. So the Ultra is $1,099 on the low end until you add. They're all $1,099. Yeah.
Maybe I'll try to get one to review when I go on my camping trip, and I want to use it in low power mode for the whole time and see like, okay, can I, if I'm on like a long extended trip like this, if I use it in low power mode, where I'm supposed to get at least 4 or 5 days of battery out of it, do I lose access to these like auto pinning backtrack features? Like, what gets locked out when I want to use it in like a more survivalist situation? Not
that would be
a little extreme, but I'm kind of curious. Yeah.
A more remote situation. That would be a really cool story though.
One more battery life really mattered.
Yeah. Cause there's very few reviews out there beyond like things that like outdoor YouTube channels and magazines and stuff have done that have really used the utility of the Ultra. Like, I switched to it just because I saw so many people wearing it at the event and I was like, oh, I have this sitting in my drawer, I should really give it more of a real chance. And I don't hate it as much as I thought I would. I really do enjoy the extra battery life. Like, I haven't plugged it in for 2 days and it's still
nice.
And then the other thing that I was gonna mention this to you before the pod that I didn't realize is, like, if you're swimming with it, and this is kind of useless for me, but like, I was swimming in just like a pool on the weekend, it automatically goes into like water mode, which sure the other Apple Watch does that too, but it'll show you the depth. Like, if you put your hand down, it'll tell you like how deep it's going, which is kind of cool and like an interesting thing. I don't know what I would personally ever use that for, but it's a feature that I didn't even know the Apple Watch Ultra had, because I never really.
But I mean, if you were like a recreational, even like not even scuba whatever, but a snorkeler, and you're like, okay, this watch can go down this certain amount, and I know like, if I go down a certain amount, pressure is going to start to become a problem. So having that just like instantly be like, dive in and be like, all right, I'm down like 8 feet. Good to go. That's pretty cool, actually. And I like the like instant reaction of the watch.
It just happened right away. I was like looking at it in the pool. I'm like, what is this showing me? Oh, whoa, it's the depth. It was just like one of those aha moments where I've used this thing for several weeks in the past, but I didn't know that was a feature that existed.
Fair enough. This is pretty cool. I have one last thing, and this ties into a kind of bit of the iOS updates from last year too. So I think it is worth talking about, but it's the Apple Watch biking workout and how it's now tied to your iPhone. So previously when you're doing any workout, it will like prompt you like, hey, you're doing this workout, you want to record it, whatever. So that's pretty cool. It will already do that. But now when it does that, it will also send a notification to your phone, because a lot of people, when they're biking, will have their phone in a not a dock. I guess it's kind of a dock. What are those things called? A phone holder on your handlebars.
Like a holder of some kind, yeah.
Yeah, like a clamp, whatever.
I have one.
You got it in there so you can see the screen. And so that way you can, like, without having to take your wrist off the handlebars, you can just, I don't know. For me, it's just my Apple Watch on my left wrist, and I definitely like pulling. Like, it's hard to pull both off because you have to touch with one hand, so you have to, like, reach down on your hand on the handlebar. It's not a great interaction with the watch on a bike. Yeah. But anyway, so this will pop up as a live activity on your phone. So you can see all your stats on your phone screen as you're biking, you know, cadence, speed, rhythm, if you have a bike computer. If not, it will just show you like your heartbeat and the regular workout information you would get from the watch. But you can click on that live activity thing and it will spread up to like the full screen to show you like all your bike stuff, just kind of in a non-distracting way. And I would use that. Yeah. And I just think similar to what you were saying with the Apple Watch automatically going into like water mode, this is just, I can now hop on my bike, put my phone on my bike holder or my phone holder. I need to find out like a smoother way to say that. I can just strap my phone into my bike and just go. And then like within 2 minutes, it's going to pop up and record my trip. And that's pretty cool and pretty seamless and a really good use of live activities, which we have seen a bit more come out at the end of the year. That was like iOS 16's kind of big feature. But I'm hoping we get more and more of them because things like this are really good, really seamless, and they seem like really almost proactive and convenient. And I think that's really smart and it's good design. So hypes me up more than it should, I guess.
I would use that all the time. I'm gonna launch that the next time. Well, when it comes out, when watchOS 10 is actually out. We didn't mention anything about iPadOS 17. I'll just quickly say the only thing that I saw that was interesting was the fact that the custom lock screen stuff is finally coming to iPadOS, which launched on iOS 16. That's the only thing that I want to note. But just in interest of time, we'll very briefly talk about tvOS 17 and macOS Sonoma. The thing that I think is the killer app with tvOS 17 now is the ability to find the Siri remote, like if you happen to lose it through your iPhone. Like, yeah. I don't know why more people aren't talking about that. And I also really don't understand how it works. Like, I asked Apple during a briefing that I was in and couldn't get like a clear answer explaining the way that it works. I'm assuming it's some sort of wireless signal that connects the TV remote to the Apple TV, and the iPhone and tvOS are like hijacking that. I don't know how it works. I'm just glad that it exists because I lose my Siri remote probably at least once a week, if not more. And there was one instance where I lost it for like 2 weeks. I just couldn't find it. It had like fallen inside my couch somehow, like through a little hole in it. So I'm hyped about that. But
fair enough. Yeah, I haven't dug enough into that. I just did a quick search. So it doesn't seem like the Apple TV remote has ultra wideband, which is
what no, it doesn't. It
drags you in. So it must be, maybe it connects to the TV with like Wi-Fi Direct or something, which would still send off like a spectrum. Yeah, and you could track it down. And what they really should do is put a little speaker on it. Maybe there is, but like if it could give a little chirp sound, that would be really helpful too, or something.
It should also just have the ultra wideband chip. Like, that was the argument that I was making.
Honestly,
when that
yeah.
remote first came out, like how much would that have really cost to put that in? That said, yeah. Whatever they're doing, if this works, because obviously we haven't tried it yet, it's a killer feature for me anyways.
Yeah. On TVS, so there's really not much else. I mean, they like updated some of the visuals. I think you can have more apps across your rows now. And then what was it? Oh yeah, FaceTime, like you already said, which is kind of cool.
FaceTime.
It's interesting that this actually came so late. But I guess this really comes on the back of Apple developing its
continuity
camera continuity, which is I don't know if this will be a video episode, but like that's what's filming right now is my iPhone on a stick over there. So pretty cool stuff, works really, really well so far in our experience. So I guess, yeah, bringing it to the iPhone makes sense. But yeah, years ago when Facebook was like putting out TV or cameras for your TV, it was so strange that Apple didn't kind of jump on it then, because I think people will get a use out of it.
And then macOS Sonoma, the only thing that stood out to me is the fact that there's a new gaming mode that prioritizes processor power and RAM for better performance with gaming. It's another example of Apple trying to make gaming a thing on the Mac, even though it really isn't. That's the one thing that stood out for me. And then I was watching
like three-layer or four-layer translation or something. Like,
yeah, I was just going
to
say that.
From like x86 to Windows, like x86 Mac to through Rosetta, then through this like new optimization thing that you're talking about. And From what I've seen on Twitter, it seems very promising.
Dave2D did a cool video about it, like nice. Saying that he saw someone on the plane on his way home from the event playing like Cyberpunk on their Mac, and he just like talked to the developer for a while about how they're able to do that. So that stuff is interesting, but I also don't think that it's necessarily something that the average like Mac user, even someone who's a little more technically minded, would end up messing around with. But there's broader implications of perhaps this will result in finally us seeing like a few more major game releases on the Mac, just because the process of porting it is a little easier. But Apple's done stuff like this in the past and that's never panned out, so who knows.
I will say though, notably, we are in a world where stuff like this is starting to pan out more. I mean, the Steam Deck runs on a similar not four layers of translation, but Steam Deck translating Windows games to run on Proton, which is Linux or whatever, is a similar like level of translation. So it seems like this is something that can work, although the Steam Deck is a much lower lift in terms of power. So it's like, I think it can get away with more. The Mac being these like beast computers, is the people are going to expect the games to look really good and like ray trace and stuff. Although who knows if that's going to work on any of the older M1 stuff. M2
might Rosetta be emulation is good.
Yeah. Yeah, so far, though, it seemed cool. I saw Max Weinbeck on Twitter playing Spider-Man on his Mac. So it nice. Seemed interesting. He seemed to be spending a long time getting it set up, but once he was playing it, it seemed to work. So very cool. Yeah, and then on the macOS side, the only thing that I was really excited about was, and this is so dumb, this is actually kind of an iPad feature that we skimmed over too, which is interesting, actually. The iPad really did fall right in between the Mac and the iPhone this year. Like most of the features coming to those two things are coming to the iPad, like the FaceTime updates and stuff, and this thing, which is all the new PDF controls. Basically, Adobe, it's weird because earlier in this show we were just kind of like harping on Apple for killing off like journaling apps, but here I'm praising them for digging a hole and shoving Adobe Reader's dead limp app body into it, because man do I hate Adobe Reader. And like the find and what's it called? Fill and sign mode is like all these extra modes on this.
It's awful.
I'm sure everybody uses it and everybody's like, well, I have this one feature in it that I need to use. But if we could just wipe that out and those PDF controls built right into macOS and like iPadOS as well, which is maybe even the more exciting part of this, that is cool. And I'm excited to just like have one less reason to like look Adobe in the eye at all. Because they've
just never look, just never look at Adobe again for the rest of your life.
Yeah, man, that stuff's it's just so expensive. And like, I love it and I hate it. I was playing a lot with the new Photoshop beta, and the generative AI thing is so powerful and so good. And like, I use Photoshop and Lightroom all the time, but like, I got up Premiere, and if somebody could make an app as good as Photoshop and Lightroom that was like $500 instead of like $500 a year, I would buy it in a heartbeat.
Every time I open up Adobe Acrobat, I just get mad. That's how I would describe it. I just get angry.
I feel like I open up my
nothing
Mac.
Nothing makes sense.
And it's just like always open too. And I'm like, what are you doing, Acrobat? Like, get out of here.
I use it to sign like embargoes and documents and stuff like that. But I often just get lost when I'm trying to fill it out because it's not straightforward.
It's so convoluted for what it needs to be. So yeah, we're happy that that's dying. Let me just check quick before we move on if I got anything else in my macOS notes. Yeah, that was it. And then like the face.
There's widgets. Widgets that slide around. I don't really care about that, but that was a thing. It was like the return of the widgets this year in some ways.
Yeah, and it was cool that they do like fade away when you put a window over top of them. They go like transparent so you don't like get distracted by them. That was pretty cool. And there's likely some niche scenarios where widget like mirroring from your iPhone to your Mac would be pretty powerful. Like maybe you have like a garage door opener, or like I've seen people talking about like the car starting widgets, like having access to that on your Mac. It's just kind of a handy little feature. So if you're like sending some emails in the morning, you could like start your car, walk through your house, pick up your phone, get in, good to go, all from your computer. So
I would think
those are kind of
that.
Niche edge scenarios, but like pulling widgets from the iPhone should allow for like some cool little cheats and hacks in people's lives. And I'm here for that. It's kind of like the Shortcuts app, but ideally a lot easier to use.
It's just interesting. Well, I'll mention this now just because we're about to get into hardware, but it's interesting that like there's an era of Apple where they wanted everything to be in an app. Like widgets were not a thing in Apple's world. Oh. They wanted you to always open an app, and now the widgets have returned in full force across every operating system.
And I think this actually plays into the Vision Pro. I feel like this is a hedge to get apps running on Vision Pro quickly, but they finally announced web apps on Safari. So
you can
pin web apps to the dock in Safari and multiple profiles in Safari, not related to this Vision Pro tangent, but I do think the web app part is like, oh, now all these web apps will work more natively on Windows, or not on Windows, whoops, on Mac. And theoretically, then you could also just like pin those out of Safari on Vision Pro, maybe giving that a bit of a quick running ground to start off in the next few years.
That's true.
For simple apps. Yeah.
Let's talk about hardware for a little bit before we delve into the big piece of hardware, the Vision Pro. So we also saw the 15-inch MacBook Air at this event. I remember
talking to you. We almost walked right by it.
We did, yeah. We almost walked past it because it's
we're like,
so...
is that it? Nah. Maybe.
We think the 13. We're not sure. I didn't think that this thing was real. Like, I know it's been rumored for a long time. It just didn't make sense to me in terms of Apple's lineup. That was until I actually used it. Very impressed with it. I actually have one. There's no video of this, but I have one sitting beside me. I'm going to be writing about it at some point for Mobile Syrup. And it's really, really light. You picked it up too. I think you thought it was very light as well.
Oh yeah, it didn't feel significantly heavier than the other Air, but it did feel lighter than the Pros. So, I mean, it's right where you want it, I guess.
Yeah, going from the Pro to this like light laptop was like a breath of fresh air to some extent, because especially after lugging the Pro around in my backpack all week at WWDC, it was like, this is amazing. It is so light.
Yeah, it's really weird to like kind of pinpoint the differences, because like when you do hold them side by side, you're like, okay, it doesn't feel like that much heavier. Like, what is like 2/3 of a pound or whatever it is? But yeah, like you said, like when it is in your backpack, I think you notice the Pros, and just the extra couple bits that are shaved off the Air makes you just not notice them. And I think that is the biggest difference for me, at least when I had the 13-inch Air last year. That was something that I really took away.
I said it to you a couple times. I was like, I wish I had the 13-inch Air, not this Pro. I do not need the Pro. Like, for what I do now for my job, I do not need the Pro. Like, I can, the power of Apple's M series chips is like good enough for my purposes, even if I was still using an M1.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, we used to have video edit on M1. I remember when I did the M1 Mac video on the island, just blown away. I was like, this is the best freaking computer ever. Like, I'm rendering so quick. Battery life is awesome. And we're like, now, you know, a few generations removed from that. And yeah, everything is awesome over here. It's pretty cool.
I don't think there's anything else really to say about it. Like, it's 15 inches, so it's obviously 2 inches.
I'm a little bigger. Sad that we didn't get a couple of extra ports on one side.
Yeah,
I think that would have went a long way towards like stopping people from buying the 13-inch MacBook Pro. I'm still hoping this will. I think there has been years and years and years of conditioning for consumers that like the MacBook Air is for students and the MacBook Pro is for like everybody else, and even for students. I mean, I know most of the people I saw in university, and this was years ago at this point, were using MacBook Pros and they didn't need to then. But still, the like selling kind of sales market force behind that was like, you want to beef out, you get the MacBook Pro, and the Air is just kind of like not very powerful. And I think that dynamic has completely changed with the M series, but I still think we see a lot of people buying MacBook Pros, where I think like now this computer is finally the piece of the puzzle that is like bigger, it's a little flashier than the regular MacBook Air. Like, Apple store salespeople can upsell it the same way they could upsell a Pro. You know, they still get that, like, upsell in. Because, like, in sales, you know how crucial the upsell is. So, you know, they come in, someone's like, I need a laptop. What's this one here? And like, well, that's the Air. But if you really want to bump it up, we got a bigger one over here for an extra couple $100. And it's offering all these more pixels, blah, 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 blah. And I think this is a turning point for them. Only because of all those things I just said. And then also because the other Airs got cheaper because this one released, which I think is a very smart move.
How much cheaper did they get? It was
I believe each other Air dropped 100. Yeah, I'm not sure 100? Exactly the Canadian prices. Let me just...
I think it was 100, even in Canada. I know there's a price
that makes the most sense.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't on board with this going into it because I didn't think it made sense. And now I get it. I think the other thing worth noting is that a lot of Windows laptops are 15 inches. That's the pretty standard size for Windows laptops. So in a sense, it also makes sense for Apple to offer a similar sized device. And now they have that out there. But I agree with you about the ports. It, like, just looking at it beside me, it's really weird that there's all this real estate and there's only only the two ports. It's
even a single USB-C port on the like on the side that just says the headphone jack.
That's all it needs.
Really helpful. It's like I don't like four is whatever. I don't really need four, but even just one on each side would have been nice. Plus the MagSafe port and the headphone jack, and I think that would have been fine. But like just having them all on one side means like I gotta set my desk set up around this, and I can't like it's not as flexible to like fit in all these different places in my life.
Well, that was what I ran into when I had the M1.
M1 Pro only had two ports.
The M1 Pro that only had two. Yeah. I had to like rework everything on my desk just to use that. It was a nightmare.
Brutal. Yeah. So you're going to go through that again, I guess, later today.
Yeah, I will. Actually, I have it. I have it. So my desk setup, I never changed after doing that. I still have the cords all going from the left side. So I'm going to do the exact same thing again. I'm looking at it now once I get it like up and running. Cool. Yeah, I don't think there's much else to say about it. One thing that I'm interested in testing is the battery life, just because
that's exactly what I was going to say.
Screen. It's, but
well, and a bigger battery though, it should be beef. I think it's going to be sweet.
In theory, they don't talk about battery size; they just give you like an estimate. And the estimate, to my knowledge, is relatively the same as the 13-inch, give or take like a couple, not a couple hours, like a little bit of time.
Yeah, they're saying so I don't 18 hours on the impact. Airs. It says
it's the exact same that they're recommending across both.
Oh wait, that's 13. Yeah, 18 on both. 18 hours on both.
So
recommended.
We'll see if it hits that. But Apple's estimates, you also got to take them with a grain of salt because it's like you only use Safari and you're not watching videos. And
I think it is just Apple TV Plus played back for constantly on like
is that what they do now?
Mid brightness or something. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they told the Wall Street Journal that or something. Which is like nobody would ever do that for 12 hours.
No. And it's different. It's different now too, because there's more native M1 apps than there was like back when this was a huge problem, like when Chrome would destroy the M1's battery. So it's a bit of a different situation.
I'm actually interested to see what you get out of this, because the Pros have a longer rated battery life, but they are just so much more power hungry than the Airs. So realistically, like everything you do on the Pro would probably just draw a little more power than it would on the Air. So you might be able to actually sneak out more on the Air just because it's of possible. Your workflow, not dipping into things like heavy duty photo video editing all the time. You know, I think a little bit of Photoshop might hit you a little bit, but like if you're not doing 2 hours of video editing, you should crush through, I think.
Yeah, good point. Let's talk about the Mac Studio now. To my knowledge, this is the exact same overall design. I'm also looking at
an HDMI 2.1 port. It got that,
but it's not actually HDMI 2.1. It just supports some of the spec of HDMI 2.1. But as far as I can tell, it's the stuff that like you care
no, I thought
about.
Somebody said it was 2.1 confirmed.
No, I was in a briefing, and I think Apple got in a little bit of trouble for saying that their devices officially support HDMI 2.1 because there's certain aspects of the spec, because it's this very, very long list from the HDMI consortium that its ports do not support. But that said, it's all the stuff that you care about. Like it's all the resolution and the frame rate, all of those things it supports. And that's all that really matters. It's some of the lesser known, I can't even remember them offhand, the lesser known aspects of the spec that it doesn't. So they can't officially say that it supports HDMI 2.1, but they say that it supports the majority of the HDMI 2.1 spec.
That is brutal. Okay, but either way, yeah, I guess I mean it's doing
doesn't
like,
matter.
Okay, whatever.
It's just
it says they can do 6 displays off it or 8. Something like crazy like that. But yeah, either way, that is the one thing that I was going to say changed, but I guess it only changed slightly.
And then you have the M2 Max.
Yeah.
You got the M2 Max and you got the M2 Ultra, which are super powerful. I don't know what the one that I have has in it. I'm guessing it's the M2 Max lately, because that's usually what Apple sends me. That's what they sent me with the first Mac Studio. So I'll be running benchmarks and we can kind of like give you a visual view of like how much more powerful it is. And the only thing that I wanted to say about these is like, they're like the MacBook Pro is already overkill for what I do most of the time, but I do appreciate the power. Once you get into the Max and the Ultra, like it's well beyond anything that I could possibly need. Who do you think the Mac Studio is now targeting? Is it like developers? Is it like Pixar doing animation? Like, who is this particular device for?
Yeah, it's really tough because the Mac Mini, I believe, does have the M1 or M2 Pro chip, which in our experience, and that's what I use in my laptop like every day, has been fantastic. I do think the Max, if you're going to go desktop, part of the reason I went Pro is because it has supposedly better battery life. So if you're going to go desktop, maybe going Max is a better get because you're worrying less about power over time. But yeah, it's hard to point out because, like we were saying in the Air conversation, the regular M2 chips, M2 Pro chips are so powerful, but the Air is held back by lack of ports. And the Mac Mini is kind of in that same boat. So if you want to get ports and like unlock creative potential with like seamless workflows, the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Studio
like Johnny
have
like as,
yeah, they've got this aluminum bodies.
Aluminium.
But they have like SD cards. They have the newer HDMI spec. They support more monitors. They've got a USB-A port on here. No, they have, but they have more ports, and like that's kind of the bigger thing that you're paying for. At this point, like you would have to be really pushing it, like making a movie or maybe like Blender, like high end, like 3D visual effects workflows.
That's what I think it's for now. Yeah.
But yeah, again, like it's really hard to pin down because you could get all that same power out of a laptop too. But I think that's who it's for. Yeah, it's a little, it's a shame, I guess, because it's so great. But the Mac Mini is just such a better deal that I think people would like lean towards the Mini. But yeah, it's a fantastic computer, and it's high-end workflows, motion graphics, 3D art. I mean, really intense video editing and things that had to go like super fast and a lot of cuts probably. I don't know.
And then you also
very pro. Yeah.
There's also the Mac Pro got the M2 Ultra chip as well. And like the Mac version of that, the only thing that I have noteworthy here, and I think there's been a bit of reporting out there, particularly with Apple, even on the record, I haven't had the chance to read the stories yet, but the fact that it still just uses an integrated GPU, there's not an opportunity to add external GPUs to it, which I expected. But I think a lot of people were hoping that given Apple's more open nature with these cards, where you can swap out all the I/O on the back and that sort of thing, that they would kind of open up the floodgates and allowed external GPUs. I didn't expect that, but I know that that was something that even other like YouTubers and Canadian media on WWDC thought would happen.
It seemed to be the only thing going into it that logically made sense. Which is why the Mac Pro, I haven't looked at the pricing, so I don't know if the price is still like ludicrous compared to
Ludicrous. It's crazy. I'm looking at it right now. It's starts at $8,999.
I will say the fans in the front are huge. They are thick. They are like, I don't even know, three hockey pucks deep, it felt like. But and you get three of them. So the air supply through the Mac Pro is really the biggest draw. There was a huge heat sink in there. But then again, I really don't know where they would upgrade over the Mac Studio. So like those PCI spot, or I'm like getting jumbled up on the acronyms, but the PCI slots in the Mac Pro, basically, generally that's what you would use in a Windows computer to connect a graphics card, but you can still connect a lot of other accessories. Connect a lot of other accessories because PCI, especially PCI Gen 4, like is in the Mac Pro, is like the fastest way to transfer data through like a port connection that is like reasonably standard. So you can just jam data through it like fast. It has tons and tons of lanes to push data through. That's why they work so well for graphics cards. So Apple, what they were talking to us about, we were kind of asking questions at the show floor, was like, oh, well, we were thinking about people putting storage cards. I remember watching like a Linus Tech Tips video that was like a PCI card that fit in and then just had like 10, probably not 10, but like six, maybe 10, a ton of M.2 slots. So you could put a ton of really fast hard drives in and then you could just like swap those in and out. So like theoretically, you could buy the Mac Pro and you could expand it through like 80 terabytes of storage, ultra fast storage fairly easily. Or you could get like a really high end sound card, which I think once you get into like really high end audio mixing for like movies, like the show they showed off, Top Gun, something like that. Yeah, it makes sense where you really want like a really high-end sound card where you know you can control all the variables on it and it's not through USB. It's fast. It's in there. But beyond like storage and audio, it would be way more niche, I think, to find things that connect through PCI. I'm sure there are those cases. There are probably a few professionals on the edge that are like, we need it for this thing, or we have like a skilloscope. I don't even know. But like there will be some things that fit into it. But it is a shame that they're not working with graphics cards, because it would have been cool to see, and it would have just been interesting. It would have opened up the market, I guess, a little bit. But there would have been a lot of coding, I guess, for compatibility in there. And I don't know if NVIDIA, Intel, or AMD would really play ball. So hard to tell.
They did work with like this is probably 5-6 years ago now, but there was like an era where you could use an external GPU with the MacBook Pro. So they do have a history of it. I totally forgot about
that. Oh yeah, I forgot about that little thing. Yeah.
But that's so the true. Only thing that I wanted to mention here before we get onto the Vision Pro is just that, like, so in my mind, the Mac Studio is for people that require like very, very high end video editing or do like a lot of graphics work, like video game developers, that sort of thing. The Mac Pro to me is like, and it's crazy expensive. It's like a regular person's not buying that thing for the most part. That's like
a company is.
Computer animation studios. That's like Disney. That's like, whoever.
Paramount, like, Weta VFX. Paramount, like,
yeah. VFX studios are buying those and using them. So when people cry about, I don't want to say cry, but when people complain about the cost really isn't a thing because it's companies that are buying it, right? It's like a little, it's a little different to me, at least in my brain. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that hits the nail on the head, which is, I guess, why it's just so strange to us. And again, it is a bit strange that the price between that and the studio is pretty drastic for that coming with the same chip.
Okay, let's talk about the Vision Pro. I went hands on with it.
I did not. I'm gonna cry.
Didn't.
About it.
So
I've
will
been crying about it a lot.
I'll let you just, like, I think the best way to present this rather than me going into a long-winded spiel about it is, like, you just ask me questions about what you think listeners would want to know about with the Vision Pro.
Okay, for someone on the outside, I think the thing that, like, really blew me away the most with everyone I talked to, and I talked to everyone I could about their experiences with the Vision Pro to live vicariously, but it was the eye tracking. I didn't meet a single person who was like, oh, the eye tracking wasn't as good as I thought. Every single person was just like, holy moly, it was so, like, minute. It captured every, like, minuscule movement, and it just seemed to work. It was magic. Can you speak to that, I guess?
Oh, look, I don't know if anybody
MacBook
heard that.
Air is ready.
That's the MacBook Air. It's ready.
Came
to
out
go.
Of the oven.
But yeah, I can definitely talk about that. That was one of the most impressive things about the Vision Pro was the fact that the eye tracking works so well. Like, I tried to break it. And I guess to just explain what it does, like, your eyes are kind of the mouse for this device. I did like a string of CBC radio interviews and tried to break it down for a general audience. And that's what I was describing it as. Like, your eyes are the mouse. Whatever you look at is where your pointer is. And you can try to break it. You can try to confuse it. You can dart your eyes around like crazy. It doesn't matter. It will track them and it will work. I couldn't
That's
trick
so cool.
it. I don't know if that situation would change if the lighting in the room was different. Obviously, this was a controlled demo in a very specific environment. But
I don't think it would, because the lighting inside the headset would be consistent. It's not really goggles.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't
it's
think
a
so
screen
either.
That blocks out all the light.
I just
think
want
it's
to hedge
infrared cameras and stuff.
I just want to hedge like slightly, because like when
For
Apple
sure.
does these things, it's very controlled. It's in this perfectly lit room. I don't know what it would be like if you're using it at home on your couch, but under those circumstances, it was one
or
of
like
the
on
most
a bumpy flight where you're like, oh my
yeah, you know what I mean? Like there's other aspects yeah. in there, but in terms of like tech demos that I have experienced, it was extremely, that feature in particular was extremely seamless. And then the other thing tied to that is the like, kind of
yeah.
claw motion that you use, which would be the clicking of your mouse. So you like look at something and you click your fingers, like you make this little, like, I don't know,
you
almost
pinch
like
your
a,
pointer finger
you
and
pinch,
your thumb together.
You pinch. Yeah. Yes, that's how you should how I should be.
But a quick, yeah, it is like a pinch, but it's not quite like the slow pinch to zoom movement. It's quick. It's like you're pretending on like you're squishing something between your two fingers.
And that also just works in a very ridiculously accurate way. Like, I was doing it really low by my legs. I was doing it up in the air. I was doing it like beside my head, and it just worked. And it was weird at first, this interaction of like, okay, I'm looking at this, then I'm pinching. But after like less than 30 seconds to a minute, it was one of the most natural forms of interacting with a device that I've ever experienced. And I've even gone so far as describe it in some cases, the equivalent of like using Apple's like iPhone touchscreen for the first time, where it did so many things different than other touchscreens we'd seen in the past, like the scrolling or the interaction of like touching things, the way that they vibrate,
the,
like all these
the, like,
little things
of things. Yeah.
Yeah. The weight of things. That's what it felt like. It did feel in that respect, like the future of computing in some ways. So I'll give Apple credit when it comes to how you control the device.
Yeah, it seemed really cool. Although the idea of like laying on my couch, and people can't see this, but just laying on my couch, not moving, but my finger just like rapidly like, like what is that guy doing? And you like look in the headset, and I'm just like at a jazz concert. Like,
that's good.
But yeah, I think the next thing, I guess, so. I guess I want to ask about comfort and this sort of like infamous third strap that's sort of floating around the internet.
Yeah. In all the pictures, you only saw that one strap that went over your head. And that was one of the things that I was somewhat worried about with Apple's headset, because I assumed it would be front weighted. And I was right. It is very front weighted. But metal in design, the demo space, glass. There's this. Sorry?
I said it's a metal design. Lots of glass.
Yeah. A lot of glass. Yep. It's a thick, heavy boy. But that strap that goes across the top of your head that you just have to adjust, and we've seen it on other VR headsets, and I think that's part of why Apple hasn't shown it off. It wants to differentiate itself in some ways. Definitely a hair ruiner. It made it sit very securely on my head. Like I was moving around. It wasn't a very active demo. I was sitting stationary, but it stayed sitting on my head the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's very Apple to show it off without the like security, like lock-in head strap or whatever.
But there was a clip.
It'd be funny if there's like another strap that's like a chin strap.
This is a secret chin strap. Wasn't there a clip that came out later though that featured?
Yeah,
that
one tiny clip. It was like it was hard to tell. It wasn't like, but like, you know what I mean? Like they showed off how many were in the demo. Like 8, 9.
It was intentional.
All looking exactly the same. None of them had the strap. Nobody in the footage that we actually saw that was using for a long time was like using that strap, which makes sense. You got to make it look cool. And I think they did. Maybe that's what we should talk about next is sort of your favorite parts of the design of it. But yeah, it was a very Apple move to paint the picture their way. But yeah, let's talk about the design.
Sorry. I think it looks, I've been describing it as like this cool cyberpunk thing, and like people in the comment sections have been destroying me for it. But I do still stand by that. Like, if no one can see this, but Bennett just pulled his AirPods Max down over his face, and that's kind of the vibe that the device evokes.
It'll be in the future.
I think in person, very similar to a lot of different tech products, it looks way cooler. You really get more of appreciation for that front facing eyesight screen, which wasn't active and wasn't working in my demo. I should note that. The curved design, the like AirPods the Max, like aluminum. What are the AirPods?
Yeah, I was
Max
gonna say. Have? I'm pretty sure they're aluminum, but like, yeah, that like matte aluminum that like wraps around, and it's just like curves ever so slightly inwards to cup under your face, and outwards to like catch the bulb of the glass, yeah. And it has like all these little holes in it for airflow and speakers and things like that, and like the cameras are really quite invisible in it. Like, it's pretty cool.
It like, doesn't, you know what I mean? Like feel the like
a toy. Is, the Meta is Quest 3 has say. like a triforce of cameras like directly on the front that you can just see staring out at you, and the Apple One doesn't look like cameras, even though there's like 18 cameras. I don't really know how many actual cameras there are, but there are like a ton of sensors on the front of that thing that they're all tracking information around you in camera-like ways. But even the strap, I don't want to get off this yet, but the strap, like the sort of like waffle texture in it, and the idea that you just like twist the one knob on the side and it pulls it tight, is like a really simple way. And it did seem like, even without the top strap that we didn't get to see, even the one that we did get showed off a lot, that like sort of cup part where it sort of cups the back of your head, like kind of like a baseball mitt more than just a strap going across, seemed pretty cool. And I just liked the look of the material they were using. That like heather gray and orange was really futuristic. And yeah, I'm still shook they haven't put out an orange iPhone to go orange accents on Apple Watch Ultra and then orange accents on this. Well, I guess if there's an iPhone Ultra next year, maybe it'll have orange accents, but dreaming of it.
It's the best looking VR AR headset that I have ever worn. It was the most comfortable, with the PlayStation VR 2 maybe kind of tying it in some ways. The only thing I would say is that it's heavy, and I wore it for 30 minutes and it felt light when I first put it on. By the end of that 30 minute demo session, it started to feel extremely heavy, but it started to feel weighty on me. Yeah. I could feel it. I knew that it was there. But there's definitely, like you just talked about it all, there's definitely some Apple design cues in there that you would not see from another company. Like the Meta Quest 3 looks like a toy in comparison. Yeah. But the other thing I would say is it's still a very like geeky, nerdy design. The one thing that I've been talking about a lot since trying it is like, I don't think this is the end of the line for what Apple wants this type of device to look like. I think the goal is to create a pair of sleek looking glasses that don't look geeky and nerdy, that you wouldn't be necessarily embarrassed to like put on an airplane or like put on at the bus stop or something like that. Like, I think that's what, imagine wearing one at a bus stop. That's the worst example, but you know what I mean, right? Like they want something that's a little, that stands out a little less, and that even the average person, not nerds like us, the average person will look at and be like, that looks sick. That's where I think they're headed with this. And that's not what this design embodies yet, this like mainstream wide appeal. But I personally think it looks really cool.
I agree. Even it's kind of crazy because, like, as you're saying, it's almost like this is a tech demo for Apple. I mean, it's not coming out until 2024. My money's on the end of 2024. And like, even at that point, it'll be US only and probably mostly developer only, but they still made it look cool as hell. And I'm here for that. I'm here for that. But no, yeah, classic Apple product being like similar to the AirPods Max. They're like, we've got to make it out of metal. I don't care if it's too heavy and uncomfortable. It's got to be metal. It looks nice, which it does. But anyone that owns AirPod Max knows that wearing them for a long period of time is not a comfortable experience.
No, they're heavy. Heavy guys.
Yeah. They literally leave like a ridge in the top of my head that I can like run my finger over and feel like a bump where like the metal is indented my head.
Oh, yeah, totally. I had the same issue.
Brutal. Yeah, I don't know. I guess the one thing we didn't talk about really at all was how the battery connects to it. It's like this little MagSafe thing that kind of like locks in place, which is interesting.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me pop it in or out, but I did see someone do it. They were very intentional about me not touching the headset in ways that they didn't want me to touch it, which I found fascinating. I've never experienced that before in a demo, but I think they just didn't want people to do things with it that they weren't prepared to talk about yet, is what I would say. But there was a portion of the demo where I had to pick up the charger, the battery brick, slid it into my pocket. There's like a nice braided cable that runs up to the headset. It's kind of a take on MagSafe where it magnetically attaches, but you have to twist it to lock it in place. But that also brings me to something else that we should briefly talk about. A lot of the demos that I experienced were very stationary. Like I wasn't interacting with things in a room scale way. The only one that featured any movement was like, and they were kind of weird about it. They're like, you could stand up or you could stay seated. So I was like, oh, I'll stand up. So I stood up and I walked towards the wall. And a dinosaur, it was like watching dinosaurs on a TV sort of. And then the dinosaurs came out of the wall and there was like this 3D feeling to it. And that's the butterfly thing that everybody's been talking about, where like a butterfly lands on your finger and you can twist it and the butterfly is 3D. And there's this very three-dimensional aspect to it. But I also could have experienced that same thing just sitting on the couch. There wasn't anything, right. I wasn't picking up objects. I wasn't doing anything within that three-dimensional space. And I think that the headset is capable of creating those experiences. Apple just isn't showing them off yet, which I found kind of strange. There's also no gaming stuff either, which was a little weird to me. They're very much like positioning this as a productivity device, even though it will run games.
It was a lot of like floating flat windows, which is basically like you can have a monitor in front of you anywhere.
Exactly.
It's not like, I'm going to live in the Meta workspace and have a virtual office. It's like, no, I'll just be in my office and I can see it and I'll have floating monitors around me and I could turn the office part off. I guess that's what the crown does on it, right? It like kind
of you can spin this like little digital crown on the side. That's a good point. You should probably talk about that. And that was another innovative feature where like you're locked into the AR VR space, but say your partner walks in the room and you need to speak to them. You just spin this dial and that all fades away. And you then see the person in the real world in front of you and you're able to interact with them and talk to them, which I think is cool. And I know people are probably like screaming at the top of their lungs that like other headsets do this. There is a way.
Well, and also like just take the headset, like if you're already reaching up to turn the dial, why not just,
and for those listening,
I just did the motion of like taking glasses and putting them on your forehead.
And what I would say to that is this is just way more intuitive. You don't have to take the headset off, and it didn't feel uncomfortable to still be talking to the two Apple representatives flanking me. It was like a natural conversation. I'm sure it looked different for them and was probably a little more awkward because I'm wearing this headset on my face, but it was, again,
I'm kind of playing devil's advocate.
No, I know what you mean.
Because I used to be really against talking to people with AirPods in, but people do it all the time now. You just have to like accept that sometimes you will just go to a store and the people working are just going to have AirPods in, and you just have to like trust that they can hear you.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that. Like, this is Apple taking stuff that we've seen Meta do, stuff that we've seen HTC do with the several Vive headsets, and doing its own spin on it that's better than what I've at least personally experienced before.
Yeah, with, the tech with the does crown look phenomenal. Stuff. I know they showed off in a lot of the keynote footage, like Mindspace stuff.
Mindspace,
like meditation stuff, the yeah, like, calm stuff. So
I didn't write about that at all.
Anything like that that you got to go through? Yeah.
There was a very brief three-dimensional like relaxation meditation experience where these like triangles, I think they were triangles, were just kind of like flying at me, and the headset was telling me to like relax, chill out, think, be present. And it was kind of nice. Like, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I did feel a little chilled out despite there being like two people in the room just watching my every move at every time, just staring at me. I don't know if I would use a VR headset for that kind of thing, but that was an experience that I don't think many people have talked about. I didn't even remember it until now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are similar to you, where it's like, unless you use Calm or some other kind of Mindspace app, I think a lot of people haven't really transitioned over to this like daily meditation practice that Apple is really trying to push with its products. I'm one of them. I haven't transitioned over either, although starting to see the value of it perhaps. But one of the things I was going to say is, but the thing people do keep talking about is the butterfly interaction and how sort of spontaneous and real it was, but also unreal, because in real life, how many times has a butterfly landed on your hand? And, you know, once when you were a child. It is a wonderful memory, I'm sure. But like, you know what I mean? That doesn't, not something that you go out and you're like, butterflies don't just come and land on your hands. So it would be really cool if they were able to tie that in with your mind space. So like, say you're working in your monitors, right? You're like zoned in, you got your dial cranked up, you're only in the virtual world, and you're working. Point. And then all of a sudden the butterfly kind of comes over and lands on your hand, and it doesn't really say anything, but that's meant to be a moment of reflection. Like, you're meant to have a break when that happens. It comes over and you can just spend a moment being like, oh yeah, look at this cool like butterfly or dragonfly or whatever, something, or a raven could come, you know, like these little things could interrupt you with these magical moments. And maybe that's a really cool way to like implement these like mind space tactics, rather than being like, I'm going to choose to do a meditation and go into an app and like sit awkwardly on my couch and breathe deeply. Instead, it'd be like, hey, we've seen Brad working for 4 hours. Let's just throw him like a 2 minute
throw him a butterfly break.
Yeah, give him a butterfly. You know, that's monarchs really are coming through. That would be fun. Really, I would be down for that. Because like the Apple Watch, when it is like, hey, take a moment of reflection and like read you a little quote, it's like, I turned that off immediately.
Me too.
It just felt corny.
Yeah.
But the way that everyone talks about the magicalness of this like butterfly actually reacting to them and like giving them a moment, I think could be really, really powerful and really kind of cool.
Yeah, the butterfly thing was so impactful, I think in part for me, because the screen resolution is so high. It's like 2.4K above. They just say slightly above 4K. I don't think we know the actual resolution, but slightly above 4K.
It's like 23
screens.
Million pixels, whatever that breaks down into evenly.
Something like that. It's the highest resolution display that I've ever had strapped to my face in a VR AR headset. That I know for sure.
That's a quote right there. Put that on the box, baby.
So when it landed on my finger and I was like twisting it, and for me this worked. I know we talked to other people where like, the butterfly started clipping around their finger, or like it flew off, like not flew off it, but it like was floating beside it. Or for me, it was like on my finger the entire time. And I think that might've been because I did more subtle movements with my finger.
Well, I think you would have to act like a butterfly is on your finger for real.
That's what I did. That's it. That's precisely what I did. And it felt so real, even though I quite obviously knew that it wasn't, that there was like a bit of sensory trickery where it felt like the butterfly's legs were on my finger. And that's not something that I have ever experienced before in VR or in AR ever. And I've used most of the major headsets at this point over the years. I used to write like a VR column for Mobile Syrup. So that was like, and I've had very few of these moments in my career, but that was like a wow moment for me, where I was like, there's a lot of stuff about this headset that isn't ready yet, but there's something potentially groundbreaking here in some respects.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I hate being like a journalist and having to like resolve something this way, but yeah, the potential of it is extraordinary, and it'll be really exciting to see where it goes from here. I wish it was extraordinary now, but yeah, potential is
we'll see where it goes in the future.
Anything else you kind of want? I guess I have some developer interviews. If you haven't been over on Mobile Syrup, there's some cool takes from there. One of the Water Llama app we've both been kind of talking about. I set it up and I got a lot of notifications during the weekend, but I was visiting my parents, so it wasn't a lot of water that I was drinking, but
I got to use that stuff.
Yeah.
I got to use that app. I like all of my health issues are linked to the fact that I don't drink any water. I even have a water bottle here today that I have.
I brought one as well, but this is literally the story of why this is here. And it's because there's a giant green water bottle beside me is because at 10, I was like, all right, I'm going to go grab a coffee. So I walked to Tim Hortons in the rain, closed for the day, which was strange because Tim Hortons never closes.
Why is it closed?
I don't know. I'm hoping it's not like a health code violation. And then I was like, whatever. There's like a little tiny coffee shop even closer to my house because the Torrance is about as far as I'll go on like just a spontaneous walk.
Yeah,
and I was like, whatever. And the one across, like the one down the street from me, also just they're much smaller, so they're just always closed on Mondays. So I'm like standing in the rain with my umbrella, being like, what? And then I eventually just had to be like, all right, I guess I'm just gonna drink water today. Maybe that's for the best. So
that's what I
combination
try to
of water now. Llama and bad luck have brought me around.
I've one coffee in the morning and then I just try to drink water all day.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think
how
you can log coffee in the app too, and it will log it as a drink and will like give you the effects normally. But like I think when you log different drinks, it like fills up the llama sort of like piñata style with like different layers of color. So like water would be blue, coffee would be brown, like soda is red, which uses orange, something like that. It's kind of fun. Yeah.
But that's a good story that you wrote kind of outside of the hustle and bustle of all the announcements. It's like a conversation with several Canadian developers about their experience at WWDC they're there for a very different reason than us. So it's interesting to hear their perspective on the announcements and the new features and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a lot of excitement for the headset. People are still like struggling to come up with ideas for it, I think, because it's such new tech. The Water Llama guys were like, oh, maybe we could get a... they have an app called Mind Llama, like a meditation headspace app with a lot of, they really took their illustration stuff to the next level, they were saying. So it'd be kind of fun to do a VR version of that. But yeah, the other app I talked to was called Life Lapse. It was like a stop motion thing. So you'd kind of need a tripod for stop motion or like a stable camera of some sense. So a camera being on your head moving doesn't quite work. But the 3D photo stuff that got announced alongside the headset they were really into, that could be a future photography tool that we do use a lot more, kind of like live photos or something. And the last one was called Bus Bud. So if you're doing any traveling this summer and you want to take ground transportation, carpools, buses, ferries, trams, trains, Bus Bud, Canadian made, very cool app. Well designed, actually, honestly. And yeah,
that's all. Story. It's interesting stuff. And then I guess the last thing that I'll say before we wrap it up and get to the closing is that I think the thing that a lot of people are missing about this headset is that this is, and I talked about a little bit about it before, but this isn't like the final device that Apple wants to release. They had to get a piece of hardware out there to get developers to start working seriously in the AR and the VR space. Like I know they've dabbled with that with the LiDAR sensor and the iPad Pro and stuff with the iPhone 2 at the same time. But this was like, they had to get this out. They had to create a physical piece of product, a physical product. But it's not for the average consumer. Like, I don't think Apple even expects this to sell well. Like, the rumors are that they're going to manufacture less than 1 million of them worldwide. Like, they don't expect people to run out and buy this. This is for developers to create cool experiences, to get the ball rolling on future AR/VR apps down the line. And it's for, like, Apple fanatics that want to be part of the very early days of burgeoning new technology, in the same way that when Oculus first came out and there would be like different versions of the headset every 6 months that people would have to like shell out more money for. It was like for wealthy people that were very interested in being part of that process and developers. And that's what this is. This is Apple's take on that. And you can think that they're too late to the game. But the one thing that I think is undeniable is that there's very cool things that this device is capable of. Am I like sold on the future of this being the future of computing? I don't think so. And I don't know if I necessarily believe that I ever will be, but I can see the potential there on some levels, especially after using it.
For the people that think Apple is late to the game, I think the game is just beginning. One of the tweets that I saw that was really interesting was from a VR developer. And he was talking about how there's this pseudo transparent but still opaque, like you can't see through the fogged glass sort of textures on VR headsets on Windows because the power is just not enough. And Apple launched theirs out of the gate with like enough power to do these transparent windows that just like float there and have movable shadows.
That's a good point.
Like, well, that is a, you know, the game is just beginning, and Apple Silicon really, I think, unlocked the power for them for this. But I think the game of catch up from the other side will be very exciting to watch as well.
Yeah, listen to some Mark Zuckerberg reaction interviews, and he seems shook, a little shook by this device to some extent. They're fascinating stuff. I forgot who he sat down with, but I watched it this morning, and I was like, yeah, this guy can't even hide the fact that he is pretty concerned about
this. I know. Whenever you hear somebody go, "Well, but ours is cheaper," you're like, yeah, "Well, you're fucked." Sorry, guys.
He's like, "It'll make the Meta Quest 3 sell more," and I'm like, "Well, I don't know.
It actually might. It probably will. But what about the Meta Quest 4? What about the Meta Quest 5? I don't know. And the Meta Quest Pro killed it immediately. The Meta Quest Pro was immediately just killed when this got announced.
And
but the regular Meta Quest, the gaming one, for like the VR enthusiasts that don't have $3,000, only have $600 to stake a scrounge together, I think the Meta Quest Pro is a really fun headset. Or the Meta Quest 3 is going to be a really fun headset. The controllers look really awesome. And PC gaming in VR, still really great. I don't know about the future of work. Apple seems to be a few steps ahead on there. But if you want a game, Meta's got your back for sure.
True. All right. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. That's it. Thanks for listening to the Syrupcast. You can find me on Twitter at @Patrick_Rourke. And of course, on mobilesyrup.com. I have a pretty in-depth story about spending 20,000 kilometers driving Hyundai's Ioniq 5. I actually purchased one. It is my main vehicle. It is my only car. So I have a bit of a different perspective than automotive journalists or reviewers or YouTubers, whatever, that only spent like a few days with
definitely a long-term perspective, which is really cool to see.
And that's relatively, don't want to toot my own horn, but that's relatively rare in the writing about automotive space to like actually own a car and be writing about it. So some interesting insight in there. Check it out if you're interested in that. And also obviously my hands-on with the Apple Vision Pro. There's a written story Bennett threw together, this excellent video. He made me sound very intelligent with my stand-up that we had to shoot many, many times. So thanks for that. It's a stellar video that kind of breaks down a lot of what I say in the written story. So if you're not a fan of words, you can always watch that video on YouTube and on the website. And Bennett, where can people find you?
Nice. Yeah, you can find me here for the next few hours. And in honor of Mark Zuckerberg getting just destroyed, I'm going to read the entire script of The Social Network. From the back, we hear Mark, voiceover. Did you know there are more people with genius IQs living in China than there are people of any kind living in the United States? Erica, that can't be true, Mark. It is true. Erica, what would account for that? Well, first of all, a lot of people live in China, but here's my question, said Mark. Fade in, campus bar, nighttime. Anyway, no, I'm Brad Bennett. You can find me Mobile Syrup.
You should do ASMR of that. Just create a YouTube channel.
Yeah, I should redo all of the tech biopics as audiobooks.
Hell yeah.
That would be fun. I wouldn't be working here. I'd be rolling in the dough. I'd be basically the Zuckerberg level at that point. I'd be the next Bezos. Oh, yeah. But yeah, you can find me Mobile Syrup. You can find me anywhere online at the Brad Fad. We've got more Tech Effect episodes coming. Lots of Apple stuff in the pipeline as well coming out of this event. And yeah, I think it's going to be a fun summer of tech. This is a lot of cool stuff. And seriously, we didn't talk about everything, but I do think there's going to be a lot of sly iOS, iPadOS, tvOS updates coming out. So really make sure you're on mobilesyrup.com. One thing we didn't even touch about, and we're out of time, but the new AirTag updates so that you aren't stalking your loved ones that you're constantly traveling with anymore. My camera is no longer going to be the bane of Alex's existence. So exciting stuff, but I guess we'll have to talk about that one next time.
There's a lot of stuff on the site. Check out the site. We've only really scratched the surface of our WWDC coverage.
You guys, and as always, we got a site. We have a site up there.
Yeah, we do have a website.
It's a website.
Rare.
Yeah,
we're one of the only tech websites in Canada. We got one of those things floating around still.
It's up there. We host it.
And as always,
you can find this month. Yeah,
sorry. Did you pay the fees? And as always, you can find all of our content at mobilesyrup.com and also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at mobilesyrup. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Bye, everyone.
Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.